of Muggle artifacts. Mr. Weasley's dingy office seemed to be slightly smaller than the broom cupboard. Two desks had been crammed inside it, and there was barely room to move around them because of all the overflowing filing cabinets lining the walls, on top of which were tottering piles of files. The little wall space available bore witness to Mr. Weasley's obsessions. There were several posters of cars, including one of a dismantled engine, two illustrations of postboxes he seemed to have cut out of Muggle children's books, and a diagram showing how to wire a plug. Sitting on top of Mr. Weasley's overflowing in-tray was an old toaster that was hiccuping in a disconsolate way and a pair of empty leather gloves that were twiddling their thumbs. A photograph of the Weasley family stood beside the in-tray. Harry noticed that Percy appeared to have walked out of it.
"We haven't got a window,"
said Mr. Weasley apologetically, taking off his bomber jacket and placing it on the back of his chair.
"We've asked, but they don't seem to think we need one. Have a seat, Harry. Doesn't look as if Perkins is in yet."
Harry squeezed himself into the chair behind Perkins's desk while Mr. Weasley rifled through the sheaf of parchment Kingsley Shacklebolt had given him.
"Ah,"
he said, grinning, as he extracted a copy of a magazine entitled The Quibbler from its midst.
"Yes,"
he flicked through it.
"Yes, he's right. I'm sure Sirius will find that very amusing. Oh, dear. What's this now?"
A memo had just zoomed in through the open door and fluttered to rest on top of the hiccuping toaster. Mr. Weasley unfolded it and read aloud,
"Third regurgitating public toilet reported in Bethnal Green. Kindly investigate immediately. This is getting ridiculous."
"A regurgitating toilet?"
"Anti-Muggle pranksters,"
said Mr. Weasley, frowning.
"We had two last week, one in Wimbledon, one in Elephant and Castle. Muggles are pulling the flush, and instead of everything disappearing, well, you can imagine. The poor things keep calling in those pumbles, I think they're called. You know, the ones who mend pipes and things."
"Plumbers?"
"Exactly, yes. But of course they're flummoxed. I only hope we can catch whoever's doing it."
"Will it be Aurors who catch them?"
"Oh, no, this is too trivial for Aurors. It'll be the ordinary magical law enforcement patrol. Ah, Harry, this is Perkins."
A stooped, timid-looking old wizard with fluffy white hair had just entered the room, panting.
"Oh, Arthur,"
he said desperately, without looking at Harry.
"Thank goodness I didn't know what to do for the best, whether to wait here for you or not. I just sent an owl to your home, but you've obviously missed it. An urgent message came 10 minutes ago."
"I know about the regurgitating toilet,"
said Mr. Weasley.
"No, no, it's not the toilet, it's the Potter boys' hearing. They've changed the time and venue. It starts at 8 o'clock now, and it's down in old courtroom 10.
"Down in old... but they told me Merlin's beard..."
Mr. Weasley looked at his watch, let out a yelp, and leapt from his chair.
"Quick, Harry, we should have been there 5 minutes ago."
Perkins flattened himself against the filing cabinets as Mr. Weasley left the office at a run, Harry on his heels.
"Why have they changed the time?"
Harry said breathlessly as they hurtled past the Auror cubicles. People poked out their heads and stared as they streaked past. Harry felt as though he had left all his insides back at Perkins's desk.
"I've no idea, but thank goodness we got here so early. If you'd missed it, it would have been catastrophic."
Mr. Weasley skidded to a halt beside the lifts and jabbed impatiently on the down button.
"Come on!"
The lift clattered into view, and they hurried inside. Every time it stopped, Mr. Weasley cursed furiously and pummeled the number 9 button.
"Those courtrooms haven't been in use in years," said Mr. Weasley angrily. "I can't think why they're doing it down there, unless... but no."
A plump witch carrying a smoking goblet entered the lift at that moment, and Mr. Weasley did not elaborate.
"The atrium," said the cool female voice, and the golden grills slid open, showing Harry a distant glimpse of the golden statues in the fountain.
The plump witch got out, and a sallow-skinned wizard with a very mournful face got in.
"Morning, Arthur,"
he said in a sepulchral voice as the lift began to descend.
"Don't often see you down here."
"Urgent business, Bode,"
said Mr. Weasley, who was bouncing on the balls of his feet and throwing anxious looks over at Harry.
"Ah, yes," said Bode, surveying Harry unblinkingly.
Of course.
Harry barely had emotion to spare for Bode, but his unfaltering gaze did not make him feel any more comfortable.
Department of Mysteries, said the cool female voice, and left it at that.
Quick, Harry,
said Mr. Weasley, as the lift doors rattled open, and they sped up a corridor that was quite different from those above. The walls were bare, there were no windows and no doors, apart from a plain black one set at the very end of the corridor. Harry expected them to go through it, but instead Mr. Weasley seized him by the arm and dragged him to the left, where there was an opening leading to a flight of steps.
"Down here, down here!"
panted Mr. Weasley, taking two steps at a time.
"The lift doesn't even come down this far. Why they're doing it there?"
They reached the bottom of the steps and ran along yet another corridor, which bore a great resemblance to that which led to Snape's dungeon at Hogwarts, with rough stone walls and torches in brackets. The doors they passed here were heavy wooden ones with iron bolts and keyholes.
Courtroom 10, I think. We're nearly... Yes.
Mr. Weasley stumbled to a halt outside a grimy dark door with an immense iron lock and slumped against the wall, clutching at a stitch in his chest.
Go on, he panted, pointing his thumb at the door. Get in there.
Aren't you coming with...
No, no, I'm not allowed. Good luck.
Harry's heart was beating a violent tattoo against his Adam's apple. He swallowed hard, turned the heavy iron door handle, and stepped inside the courtroom. Chapter 8 The Hearing. Harry gasped. He could not help himself. The large dungeon he had entered was horribly familiar. He had not only seen it before, he had been here before. This was the place he had visited inside Dumbledore's pensive, the place where he had watched the Lestranges sentenced to life imprisonment in Azkaban. The walls were made of dark stone, dimly lit by torches. Empty benches rose on either side of him, but ahead in the highest benches of all were many shadowy figures. They had been talking in low voices, but as the heavy door swung closed behind Harry, an ominous silence fell. A cold male voice rang across the courtroom.
You're late!
Sorry, said Harry nervously. I didn't know the time had changed.
That is not the Wizengamot's fault, said the voice. An owl was sent to you this morning. Take your seat.
Harry dropped his gaze to the chair in the center of the room, the arms of which were covered in chains. He had seen those chains spring to life and bind whoever sat between them. His footsteps echoed loudly as he walked across the stone floor. When he sat gingerly on the edge of the chair, the chains clinked rather threateningly, but did not bind him. Feeling rather sick, he looked up at the people seated at the bench above. There were about 50 of them, all as far as he could see, wearing plum-coloured robes with an elaborately worked silver W on the left-hand side of the chest, and all staring down their noses at him, some with very austere expressions, others looks of frank curiosity. In the very middle of the front row sat Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic. Fudge was a portly man who often sported a lime-green bowler hat, though today he had dispensed with it. He had dispensed, too, with the indulgent smile he had once worn when he spoke to Harry. A broad, square-jawed witch with very short grey hair sat on Fudge's left. She wore a monocle and looked forbidding. On Fudge's right was another witch, but she was sitting so far back on the bench that her face was in shadow.
"Very well," said Fudge. "The accused being present, finally, let us begin. Are you ready?"
he called down the row.
"Yes, sir,"
said an eager voice Harry knew. Ron's brother Percy was sitting at the very end of the front bench. Harry looked at Percy, expecting some sign of recognition from him, but none came. Percy's eyes behind his horn-rimmed glasses were fixed on his parchment, a quill poised in his hand.
"Disciplinary hearing of the 12th of August," said Fudge in a ringing voice, and Percy began taking notes at once. "Into offences committed under the decree for the reasonable restriction of underage sorcery and the international statute of secrecy by Harry James Potter, resident at number 4 Privet Drive, Little Winging, Surrey. Interrogators, Cornelius Oswald Fudge, Minister of Magic, Amelia Susan Bones, head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, Dolores Jane Umbridge, senior undersecretary to the minister, court scribe Percy Ignatius Weasley.
Witness for the defense, Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore, said a quiet voice from behind Harry, who turned his head so fast he cricked his neck.
Dumbledore was striding serenely across the room, wearing long midnight blue robes and a perfectly calm expression. His long silver beard and hair gleamed in the torchlight as he drew level with Harry and looked up at Fudge through the half-moon spectacles that rested halfway down his very crooked nose. The members of the Wizengamot were muttering. All eyes were now on Dumbledore. Some looked annoyed, others slightly frightened. Two elderly witches in the back row, however, raised their hands and waved in welcome. A powerful emotion had risen in Harry's chest at the sight of Dumbledore, a fortified, hopeful feeling rather like that which Phoenix Song gave him. He wanted to catch Dumbledore's eye, but Dumbledore was not looking his way. He was continuing to look up at the obviously flustered Fudge.
"Ah," said Fudge, who looked thoroughly disconcerted. "Dumbledore, yes, you, got our, message that the time and, place of the hearing had been changed, then?"
"I must have missed it," said Dumbledore pleasantly. "However, due to a lucky mistake, I arrived at the ministry 3 hours early, so no harm done."
"Yes, well, I suppose we'll need another chair. Weasley, could you—"
"Not to worry, not to worry," said Dumbledore pleasantly. He took out his wand, gave it a little flick, and a squashy chintz armchair appeared out of nowhere next to Harry.
Dumbledore sat down, put the tips of his long fingers together, and surveyed Fudge over them with an expression of polite interest. The Wizengamot was still muttering and fidgeting restlessly. Only when Fudge spoke again did they settle down.
"Yes," said Fudge again, shuffling his notes. "Well, then, so, the charges. Yes."
He extricated a piece of parchment from the pile before him, took a deep breath, and read,
"The charges against the accused are as follows. That he did knowingly, deliberately, and in full awareness of the illegality of his actions, having received a previous written warning from the Ministry of Magic on a similar charge, produce a Patronus charm in a Muggle-inhabited area, in the presence of a Muggle, on August the 2nd at 23 minutes past 9, which constitutes an offence under paragraph C of the Decree for the Reasonable Restriction of Underage Sorcery 1875, and also under section 13 of the International Confederation of Wizards Statute of Secrecy. You are Harry James Potter of Number 4 Privet Drive, Little Whinging, Surrey?"
Fudge said, glaring at Harry over the top of his parchment.
"Yes," Harry said.
"You received an official warning from the Ministry for using illegal magic 3 years ago, did you not?"
"Yes, but—"
"And yet you conjured a Patronus on the night of the 2nd of August?"
said Fudge.
"Yes," said Harry, "but—"
"Knowing that you are not permitted to use magic outside school while you are under the age of 17?
"Yes, but—"
"Knowing that you were in an area full of Muggles?"
"Yes, but fully aware that you were in close proximity to a Muggle at the time?"
"Yes," said Harry angrily, "but I only used it because we were—"
The witch with the monocle on Fudge's left cut across him in a booming voice.
"You produced a fully fledged Patronus?"
"Yes," said Harry, "because—"
"A corporeal Patronus?"
"A what?" said Harry.
"Your Patronus had a clearly defined form? I mean to say it was more than vapor or smoke?"
"Yes," said Harry, feeling both impatient and slightly desperate. "It's a stag. It's always a stag."
"Always?"
boomed Madam Bones.
"You have produced a Patronus before now?"
"Yes," said Harry. "I've been doing it for over a year."
"And you are 15 years old?"
"Yes, and—"
"You learned this at school?"
"Yes, Professor Lupin taught me in my third year because of the—"
"Impressive," said Madam Bones, staring down at him. "A true Patronus at that age. Very impressive indeed."
Some of the wizards and witches around her were muttering again. A few nodded, but others were frowning and shaking their heads.
"It's not a question of how impressive the magic was," said Fudge in a testy voice. "In fact, the more impressive, the worse it is. I would have thought, given that the boy did it in plain view of a muggle..."
Those who had been frowning now murmured in agreement. But it was the sight of Percy's sanctimonious little nod that goaded Harry into speech.
"I did it because of the Dementors," he said loudly, before anyone could interrupt him again.
He had expected more muttering, but the silence that fell seemed to be somehow denser than before.
"Dementors!" said Madam Bones after a moment, raising her thick eyebrows so that her monocle looked in danger of falling out. "What do you mean, boy?"
"I mean, there were two Dementors down that alleyway, and they went for me and my cousin."
"Ah!"
said Fudge again, smirking unpleasantly as he looked around at the Wizengamot, as though inviting them to share the joke.
"Yes, yes, I thought we'd be hearing something like this." "Dementors in Little Binging?" Madam Bones said in tones of great surprise. "I don't understand."
"Don't you, Amelia?" said Fudge, still smirking.
"Let me explain. He's been thinking it through and decided Dementors would make a very nice little cover story. Very nice indeed. Muggles can't see Dementors, can they, boy? Highly convenient, highly convenient. So, it's just your word and no witnesses."
"I'm not lying," said Harry loudly, over another outbreak of muttering from the court. "There were two of them coming from opposite ends of the alley. Everything went dark and cold, and my cousin felt them and ran for it."
"Enough, enough," said Fudge, with a very supercilious look on his face. "I'm sorry to interrupt what I'm sure would have been a very well-rehearsed story."
Dumbledore cleared his throat. The Wizengamot fell silent again.
"We do, in fact, have a witness to the presence of Dementors in that alleyway," he said. "Other than Dudley Dursley, I mean."
Fudge's plump face seemed to slacken, as though somebody had let air out of it. He stared down at Dumbledore for a moment or two, then, with the appearance of a man pulling himself back together, said,
"We haven't got time to listen to more taradiddles, I'm afraid, Dumbledore. I want this dealt with quickly."
"I may be wrong," said Dumbledore pleasantly, "but I am sure that under the Wizengamot Charter of Rights, the accused has the right to present witnesses for his or her case."
"Isn't that the policy of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, Madam Bones?" he continued, addressing the witch in the monocle. "True," said Madam Bones. "Perfectly true." "Oh, very well, very well," snapped Fudge. "Where is this person?"
"I brought her with me," said Dumbledore. "She's just outside the door. Should I..."
"No! Weasley, you go!" Fudge barked at Percy, who got up at once, hurried down the stone steps from the judge's balcony, and hastened past Dumbledore and Harry without glancing at them.
A moment later, Percy returned, followed by Mrs. Fig. She looked scared and more batty than ever. Harry wished she had thought to change out of her carpet slippers. Dumbledore stood up and gave Mrs. Fig his chair, conjuring a second one for himself.
"Full name," said Fudge loudly,
when Mrs. Fig had perched herself nervously on the very edge of her seat.
"Arabella Dordine Fig," said Mrs. Fig in her quavery voice.
"And who exactly are you?" said Fudge in a bored and lofty voice.
"I'm a resident of Little Winging, close to where Harry Potter lives," said Mrs. Fig. "We have no record of any witch or wizard living in Little Winging other than Harry Potter," said Madam Bones at once. "That situation has always been closely monitored, given past events."
"I'm a squib," said Mrs. Fig. "So you wouldn't have me registered, would you?"
"A squib, eh?" said Fudge, eyeing her closely. "We'll be checking that. You'll leave details of your parentage with my assistant, Weasley. Incidentally, can squibs see Dementors?" he added, looking left and right along the bench where he sat.
"Yes, we can," said Mrs. Fig indignantly.
Fudge looked back down at her, his eyebrows raised.
"Very well," he said coolly. "What is your story?"
"I had gone out to buy cat food from the corner shop at the end of Wisteria Walk shortly after 9 on the evening of the 2nd of August,"
gabbled Mrs. Fig at once, as though she had learned what she was saying by heart,
"when I heard a disturbance down the alleyway between Magnolia Crescent and Wisteria Walk. On approaching the mouth of the alleyway, I saw Dementors running."
"Running?" said Madame Bones sharply. "Dementors don't run, they glide."
"That's what I meant to say," said Mrs. Fig quickly, patches of pink appearing in her withered cheeks. "Gliding along the alley toward what looked like two boys."
"What did they look like?"
said Madame Bones, narrowing her eyes so that the monocle's edges disappeared into her flesh.
"Well, one was very large and the other one rather skinny."
"No, no," said Madame Bones impatiently. "The Dementors, describe them."
"Oh," said Mrs. Fig, the pink flush creeping up her neck now. "They were big, big, and wearing cloaks."
Harry felt a horrible sinking in the pit of his stomach. Whatever Mrs. Fig said to the contrary, it sounded to him as though the most she had ever seen was a picture of a Dementor, and a picture could never convey the truth of what these beings were like. The eerie way they moved, hovering inches over the ground, or the rotting smell of them, or that terrible, rattling noise they made as they sucked on the surrounding air. A dumpy wizard with a large black moustache in the second row leaned close to his neighbour, a frizzy-haired witch, and whispered something in her ear. She smirked and nodded.
"Big and wearing cloaks," repeated Madame Bones coolly, while Fudge snorted derisively. "I see. Anything else?"
"Yes," said Mrs. Fig. "I felt them. Everything went cold, and this was a very warm summer's night, mark you. And I felt as though all happiness had gone from the world. And I remembered dreadful things."
Her voice shook and died. Madame Bones's eyes widened slightly. Harry could see red marks under her eyebrow where the monocle had dug into it.
"What did the Dementors do?"
she asked. And Harry felt a rush of hope.
"They went for the boys,"
said Mrs. Fig, her voice stronger and more confident now, the pink flush ebbing away from her face.
"One of them had fallen. The other was backing away, trying to repel the Dementor. That was Harry. He tried twice and produced silver vapour. On the third attempt, he produced a Patronus, which charged down the first Dementor and then, with his encouragement, chased away the second from his cousin. And that was what happened,"
Mrs. Fig finished, somewhat lamely. Madame Bones looked down at Mrs. Fig in silence. Fudge was not looking at her at all, but fidgeting with his papers. Finally he raised his eyes and said, rather aggressively,
"That's what you saw, is it?"
"That was what happened," Mrs. Fig repeated.
"Very well," said Fudge. "You may go."
Mrs. Fig cast a frightened look from Fudge to Dumbledore, then got up and shuffled off toward the door again. Harry heard it thud shut behind her.
"Not a very convincing witness," said Fudge loftily.
"Oh, I don't know," said Madame Bones in her booming voice. "She certainly described the effects of a Dementor attack very accurately, and I can't imagine why she would say they were there if they weren't. But Dementors wandering into a muggle suburb and just happening to come across a wizard," snorted Fudge. "The odds on that must be very, very long. Even Bagman wouldn't have bet."
"Oh, I don't think any of us believe the Dementors were there by coincidence," said Dumbledore lightly.
The witch sitting to the right of Fudge, with her face in shadow, moved slightly, but everyone else was quite still and silent.
"And what is that supposed to mean?" asked Fudge icily.
"It means that I think they were ordered there," said Dumbledore.
"I think we might have a record of it if someone had ordered a pair of Dementors to go strolling through Little Whinging," barked Fudge.
"Not if the Dementors are taking orders from someone other than the Ministry of Magic these days," said Dumbledore calmly. "I have already given you my views on this matter, Cornelius."
"Yes, you have,"
said Fudge forcefully. "And I have no reason to believe that your views are anything other than bilge, Dumbledore. The Dementors remain in place in Azkaban and are doing everything we ask them to."
"Then," said Dumbledore quietly but clearly, "we must ask ourselves why somebody within the Ministry ordered a pair of Dementors into that alleyway on the 2nd of August." In the complete silence that greeted these words, the witch to the right of Fudge leaned forward so that Harry saw her for the first time. He thought she looked just like a large, pale toad. She was rather squat, with a broad, flabby face, as little neck as Uncle Vernon, and a very wide, slack mouth. Her eyes were large, round, and slightly bulging. Even the little black velvet bow perched on top of her short curly hair put him in mind of a large fly she was about to catch on a long sticky tongue.
"The chair recognizes Dolores Jane Umbridge, Senior Under Secretary to the Minister," said Fudge.
The witch spoke in a fluttery, girlish, high-pitched voice that took Harry aback. He had been expecting a croak.
"I'm sure I must have misunderstood you, Professor Dumbledore,"
she said with a simper that left her big round eyes as cold as ever.
"So silly of me. But it sounded for a teensy moment as though you were suggesting that the Ministry of Magic had ordered an attack on this boy."
She gave a silvery laugh that made the hairs on the back of Harry's neck stand up. A few other members of the Wizengamot laughed with her. It could not have been plainer that not one of them was really amused.
"If it is true that Dementors are taking orders only from the Ministry of Magic, and it is also true that the two Dementors attacked Harry and his cousin a week ago, then it follows logically that somebody at the Ministry might have ordered the attacks," said Dumbledore politely. "Of course, these particular Dementors may have been outside Ministry control."
"There are no Dementors outside Ministry control," snapped Fudge, who had turned brick red.
Dumbledore inclined his head in a little bow.
"Then undoubtedly the Ministry will be making a full inquiry into why two Dementors were so very far from Azkaban and why they attacked without authorization."
"It is not for you to decide what the Ministry of Magic does or does not do, Dumbledore," snapped Fudge, now a shade of magenta, of which Uncle Vernon would have been proud.
"Of course it isn't," said Dumbledore mildly. "I was merely expressing my confidence that this matter will not go uninvestigated."
He glanced at Madame Bones, who readjusted her monocle and stared back at him, frowning slightly.
"I would remind everybody that the behavior of these Dementors, if indeed they are not figments of this boy's imagination, is not the subject of this hearing," said Fudge. "We are here to examine Harry Potter's offences under the decree for the reasonable restriction of underage sorcery."
"Of course we are," said Dumbledore. "But the presence of Dementors in that alleyway is highly relevant. Clause 7 of the decree states that magic may be used before muggles in exceptional circumstances. And as those exceptional circumstances include situations that threaten the life of the wizard, or witch himself, or witches, wizards, or muggles present at the time of the..."
"We are familiar with Clause 7, thank you very much," snarled Fudge.
"Of course you are," said Dumbledore courteously. "Then we are in agreement that Harry's use of the Patronus charm in these circumstances falls precisely into the category of exceptional circumstances it describes?"
"If there were Dementors, which I doubt..."
"You have heard from an eyewitness," Dumbledore interrupted. "If you still doubt her truthfulness, call her back. Question her again. I'm sure she would not object."
blustered
Fudge, fiddling with the papers before him.
I want this over with today, Dumbledore."
"But naturally, you would not care how many times you heard from a witness if the alternative was a serious miscarriage of justice," said Dumbledore.
"Serious miscarriage, my hat," said Fudge at the top of his voice.
Have you ever bothered to tot up the number of cock and bull stories this boy has come out with Dumbledore while trying to cover up his flagrant misuse of magic out of school? I suppose you've forgotten the hover charm he used 3 years ago.
That wasn't me. It was a house elf, said Harry.
You see,
roared Fudge, gesturing flamboyantly in Harry's direction.
A house elf in a muggle house, I ask you.
The house elf in question is currently in the employ of Hogwarts School, said Dumbledore. I can summon him here in an instant to give evidence, if you wish.
I haven't got time to listen to house elves. Anyway, that's not the only... He blew up his aunt, for God's sake!
Fudge shouted, banging his fist on the judge's bench and upsetting a bottle of ink.
And you very kindly did not press charges on that occasion, accepting, I presume, that even the best wizards cannot always control their emotions, said Dumbledore calmly, as Fudge attempted to scrub the ink off his notes.
And I haven't even started on what he gets up to at school.
But as the Ministry has no authority to punish Hogwarts students for misdemeanors at school, Harry's behavior there is not relevant to this inquiry, said Dumbledore politely as ever, but now with a suggestion of coolness behind his words.
Oh, said Fudge, not our business what he does at school, eh? You think so?
The Ministry does not have the power to expel Hogwarts students, Cornelius, as I reminded you on the night of the 2nd of August, said Dumbledore. Nor does it have the right to confiscate wands until charges have been successfully proven. Again, as I reminded you on the night of the 2nd of August. In your admirable haste to ensure that the law is upheld, you appear inadvertently, I am sure, to have overlooked a few laws yourself.
Laws can be changed, said Fudge savagely.
Of course they can, said Dumbledore, inclining his head. And you certainly seem to be making many changes, Cornelius. Why, in the few short weeks since I was asked to leave the Wizengamot, it has already become the practice to hold a full criminal trial to deal with a simple matter of underage magic.
A few of the wizards above them shifted uncomfortably in their seats. Fudge turned a slightly deeper shade of puce. The toad-like witch on his right, however, merely gazed at Dumbledore, her face quite expressionless.
As far as I am aware, however, Dumbledore continued, there is no law yet in place that says this court's job is to punish Harry for every bit of magic he has ever performed. He has been charged with a specific offence, and he has presented his defence. All he and I can do now is to await your verdict.
Dumbledore put his fingertips together again and said no more. Fudge glared at him, evidently incensed. Harry glanced sideways at Dumbledore, seeking reassurance. He was not at all sure that Dumbledore was right in telling the Wizengamot, in effect, that it was about time they made a decision. Again, however, Dumbledore seemed oblivious to Harry's attempt to catch his eye. He continued to look up at the benches where the entire Wizengamot had fallen into urgent, whispered conversations. Harry looked at his feet. His heart, which seemed to have swollen to an unnatural size, was thumping loudly under his ribs. He had expected the hearing to last longer than this. He was not at all sure that he had made a good impression. He had not really said very much. He ought to have explained more fully about the Dementors, about how he had fallen over, about how both he and Dudley had nearly been kissed. Twice he looked up at Fudge and opened his mouth to speak, but his swollen heart was now constricting his air passages, and both times he merely took a deep breath and looked back at his shoes. Then the whispering stopped. Harry wanted to look up at the judges, but found that it was really much, much easier to keep examining his laces.
"Those in favour of clearing the witness of all charges," said Madam Bones's booming voice.
Harry's head jerked upward. There were hands in the air, many of them, more than half. Breathing very fast, he tried to count, but before he could finish, Madam Bones had said,
"And those in favour of conviction?"
Fudge raised his hand. So did half a dozen others, including the witch on his right, and the heavily moustached wizard, and the frizzy-haired witch in the second row. Fudge glanced around at them all, looking as though there was something large stuck in his throat, then lowered his own hand. He took two deep breaths and then said, in a voice distorted by suppressed rage,
"Very well, very well. Cleared of all charges."
"Excellent," said Dumbledore briskly, springing to his feet, pulling out his wand and causing the two chintz armchairs to vanish.
"Well, I must be getting along. Good day to you all."
And without looking once at Harry, he swept from the dungeon. Chapter 9. The Woes of Mrs. Weasley. Dumbledore's abrupt departure took Harry completely by surprise. He remained sitting where he was in the chain chair, struggling with his feeling of shock and relief. The Wizengamot were all getting to their feet, talking and gathering up their papers and packing them away. Harry stood up. Nobody seemed to be paying him the slightest bit of attention except the toad-like witch on Fudge's right, who was now gazing down at him instead of at Dumbledore. Ignoring her, he tried to catch Fudge's eye, or Madam Bones's, wanting to ask whether he was free to go, but Fudge seemed quite determined not to notice Harry, and Madam Bones was busy with her briefcase, so he took a few tentative steps toward the exit, and when nobody called him back, broke into a very fast walk. He took the last few steps at a run, wrenched open the door, and almost collided with Mr. Weasley, who was standing right outside, looking pale and apprehensive.
"Dumbledore didn't say cleared," Harry said, pulling the door closed behind him, "of all charges."
Beaming, Mr. Weasley seized Harry by the shoulders.
"Harry, that's wonderful. Well, of course, they couldn't have found you guilty, not on the evidence, but even so, I can't pretend I wasn't..."
But Mr. Weasley broke off, because the courtroom door had just opened again. The Wizengamot were filing out.
"Merlin's beard," said Mr. Weasley wonderingly, pulling Harry aside to let them all pass. "You were tried by the full court?"
"I think so," said Harry quietly. One or two of the passing wizards nodded to Harry as they passed, and a few, including Madam Bones, said, "Morning, Arthur," to Mr. Weasley, but most averted their eyes. Cornelius Fudge and the toad-like witch were almost the last to leave the dungeon. Fudge acted as though Mr. Weasley and Harry were part of the wall, but again the witch looked almost appraisingly at Harry as she passed. Last of all to pass was Percy. Like Fudge, he completely ignored his father and Harry. He marched past, clutching a large roll of parchment and a handful of spare quills, his back rigid and his nose in the air. The lines around Mr. Weasley's mouth tightened slightly, but other than this, he gave no sign that he had noticed his third son.
"I'm going to take you straight back so that you can tell the others the good news," he said, beckoning Harry forward as Percy's heels disappeared up the stairs to the ninth level. "I'll drop you off on the way to that toilet in Bethnal Green. Come on."
"So, what will you have to do about the toilet?" Harry asked, grinning. Everything suddenly seemed 5 times funnier than usual. It was starting to sink in.
He was cleared. He was going back to Hogwarts. "Oh, it's a simple enough anti-jinx," said Mr. Weasley as they mounted the stairs. "But it's not so much having to repair the damage. It's more the attitude behind the vandalism, Harry. Muggle baiting might strike some wizards as funny, but it's an expression of something much deeper and nastier. And I, for one..."
Mr. Weasley broke off in mid-sentence. They had just reached the ninth-level corridor, and Cornelius Fudge was standing a few feet away from them, talking quietly to a tall man with sleek blonde hair and a pointed pale face. The second man turned at the sound of their footsteps. He, too, broke off in mid-conversation, his cold grey eyes narrowed and fixed upon Harry's face.
"Well, well, well, Patronus Potter," said Lucius Malfoy coolly.
Harry felt winded, as though he had just walked into something heavy. He had last seen those cool grey eyes through slits in a Death Eater's hood, and last heard that man's voice jeering in a dark graveyard, while Lord Voldemort tortured him. He could not believe that Lucius Malfoy dared look him in the face. He could not believe that he was here in the Ministry of Magic, or that Cornelius Fudge was talking to him, when Harry had told Fudge mere weeks ago that Malfoy was a Death Eater. "The minister was just telling me about your lucky escape, Potter," drawled Mr. Malfoy. "Quite astonishing, the way you continue to wriggle out of very tight holes. Snake-like, in fact." Mr. Weasley gripped Harry's shoulder in warning.
"Yeah," said Harry. "Yeah, I'm good at escaping."
Lucius Malfoy raised his eyes to Mr. Weasley's face.
"And Arthur Weasley, too. What are you doing here, Arthur?"
"I work here," said Mr. Weasley shortly.
"Not here, surely,"
said Mr. Malfoy, raising his eyebrows and glancing toward the door over Mr. Weasley's shoulder.
"I thought you were up on the second floor. Don't you do something that involves sneaking Muggle artifacts home and bewitching them?"
"No,"
said Mr. Weasley curtly, his fingers now biting into Harry's shoulder.
"What are you doing here, anyway?"
Harry asked Lucius Malfoy.
"I don't think private matters between myself and the minister are any concern of yours, Potter," said Malfoy, smoothing the front of his robes.
Harry distinctly heard the gentle clinking of what sounded like a full pocket of gold.
"Really, just because you are Dumbledore's favorite boy, you must not expect the same indulgence from the rest of us. Shall we go up to your office, then, Minister?"
"Certainly,"
said Fudge, turning his back on Harry and Mr. Weasley.
"This way, Lucius."
They strode off together, talking in low voices. Mr. Weasley did not let go of Harry's shoulder until they had disappeared into the lift. "Why wasn't he waiting outside Fudge's office if they've got business to do together?" Harry burst out furiously. "What was he doing down here?"
"Trying to sneak down to the courtroom, if you ask me," said Mr. Weasley, looking extremely agitated as he glanced over his shoulder as though making sure they could not be overheard. "Trying to find out whether you'd been expelled or not. I'll leave a note for Dumbledore when I drop you off. He ought to know Malfoy's been talking to Fudge again."
"What private business have they got together anyway?"
"Gold, I expect," said Mr. Weasley angrily. "Malfoy's been giving generously to all sorts of things for years. Gets him in with the right people. Then he can ask favours, delay laws he doesn't want passed. Oh, he's very well connected, Lucius Malfoy."
The lift arrived. It was empty, except for a flock of memos that flapped around Mr. Weasley's head as he pressed the button for the atrium, and the doors clanged shut. He waved them away irritably.
"Mr. Weasley," said Harry slowly, "if Fudge is meeting Death Eaters like Malfoy, if he's seeing them alone, how do we know they haven't put the Imperious Curse on him?"
"Don't think it hadn't occurred to us, Harry," muttered Mr. Weasley. "But Dumbledore thinks Fudge is acting of his own accord at the moment, which, as Dumbledore says, is not a lot of comfort. Best not talk about it any more just now, Harry."
The doors slid open and they stepped out into the now almost deserted atrium. Eric, the security man, was hidden behind his daily profit again. They had walked straight past the golden fountain before Harry remembered.
"Wait," he told Mr. Weasley, and pulling his money bag from his pocket, he turned back to the fountain.
He looked up into the handsome wizard's face, but up close, Harry thought he looked rather weak and foolish. The witch was wearing a vapid smile like a beauty contestant, and from what Harry knew of goblins and centaurs, they were most unlikely to be caught staring this soppily at humans of any description. Only the house elf's attitude of creeping servility looked convincing. With a grin at the thought of what Hermione would say if she could see the statue of the elf, Harry turned his money bag upside down and emptied not just 10 galleons, but the whole contents into the pool at the statue's feet.
"I knew it!"
yelled Ron, punching the air.
"You always get away with stuff!"
"They were bound to key you," said Hermione,
who had looked positively faint with anxiety when Harry had entered the kitchen and was now holding a shaking hand over her eyes.
"There was no case against you, none at all."
"Everyone seems quite relieved, though, considering they all knew I'd get off," said Harry, smiling. Mrs. Weasley was wiping her face on her apron, and Fred, George, and Ginny were doing a kind of war dance to a chant that went,
"He got off! He got off! He got off!"
"That's enough! Settle down!"
shouted Mr. Weasley, though he too was smiling.
"Listen, Sirius, Lucius Malfoy was at the ministry."
"What?"
said Sirius sharply.
"He got off! He got off! He got off!"
"Be quiet, you three!"
Yes, we saw him talking to Fudge on level 9. Then they went up to Fudge's office together. Dumbledore ought to know.
Absolutely, said Sirius. We'll tell him, don't worry.
Well, I'd better get going. There's a vomiting toilet in Bethnal Green waiting for me. Molly, I'll be late. I'm covering for Tonks, but Kingsley might be dropping in for dinner.
He got off! He got off! He got off! That's enough! Fred,
George, Ginny, said Mrs. Weasley, as Mr. Weasley left the kitchen. Harry, dear, come and sit down. Have some lunch. You hardly ate breakfast. Ron and Hermione sat themselves down opposite him, looking happier than they had done since he had first arrived at number 12 Grimmauld Place, and Harry's feeling of giddy relief, which had been somewhat dented by his encounter with Lucius Malfoy, swelled again. The gloomy house seemed warmer and more welcoming all of a sudden. Even Creature looked less ugly as he poked his snout-like nose into the kitchen to investigate the source of all the noise.
"Of course, once Dumbledore turned up on your side, there was no way they were going to convict you,"
said Ron happily, now dishing great mounds of mashed potatoes onto everyone's plates.
"Yeah, he swung it for me," said Harry.
He felt that it would sound highly ungrateful, not to mention childish, to say, "I wish he'd talked to me, though, or even looked at me." And as he thought this, the scar on his forehead burned so badly that he clapped his hand to it.
"What's up?"
said Hermione, looking alarmed.
"Scar," Harry mumbled. "But it's nothing. It happens all the time now."
None of the others had noticed the thing. All of them were now helping themselves to food while gloating over Harry's narrow escape. Fred, George, and Ginny were still singing. Hermione looked rather anxious, but before she could say anything, Ron said happily,
"I bet Dumbledore turns up this evening to celebrate with us, you know."
"I don't think he'll be able to, Ron," said Mrs. Weasley, setting a huge plate of roast chicken down in front of Harry.
"He's really very busy at the moment." "He got off! He got off! He got off!"
"Shut up!" roared Mrs. Weasley. Over the next few days, Harry could not help noticing that there was one person within number 12 Grimmauld Place who did not seem wholly overjoyed that he would be returning to Hogwarts. Sirius had put up a very good show of happiness on first hearing the news, wringing Harry's hand and beaming just like the rest of them. Soon, however, he was moodier and surlier than before, talking less to everybody, even Harry, and spending increasing amounts of time shut up in his mother's room with Buckbeak.
"Don't you go feeling guilty," said Hermione sternly, after Harry had confided some of his feelings to her and Ron while they scrubbed out a mouldy cupboard on the third floor a few days later. "You belong at Hogwarts, and Sirius knows it. Personally, I think he's being selfish."
"That's a bit harsh, Hermione," said Ron, frowning as he attempted to prise off a bit of mould that had attached itself firmly to his finger.
"You wouldn't want to be stuck inside this house without company." "He'll have company," said Hermione. "It's headquarters to the Order of the Phoenix, isn't it? He just got his hopes up that Harry would be coming to live here with him."
"I don't think that's true," said Harry, wringing out his cloth. "He wouldn't give me a straight answer when I asked him if I could."
"He just didn't want to get his own hopes up even more," said Hermione wisely. "And he probably felt a bit guilty himself, because I think a part of him was really hoping you'd be expelled. Then you'd both be outcast together."
"Come off it," said Harry and Ron together, but Hermione merely shrugged.
"Suit yourselves. But I sometimes think Ron's mum's right, and Sirius gets confused about whether you're you or your father, Harry."
"So you think he's touched in the head?" said Harry heatedly.
"No, I just think he's been very lonely for a long time," said Hermione simply.
At this point, Mrs. Weasley entered the bedroom behind them.
"Still not finished," she said, poking her head into the cupboard.
"I thought you might be here to tell us to have a break," said Ron bitterly. "Do you know how much mould we've got rid of since we arrived here?"
"You were so keen to help the Order," said Mrs. Weasley. "You can do your bit by making headquarters fit to live in."
"I feel like a house elf," grumbled Ron.
"Well, now that you understand what dreadful lives they lead, perhaps you'll be a bit more active in Spew," said Hermione hopefully, as Mrs. Weasley left them to it again. "You know, maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to show people exactly how horrible it is to clean all the time. We could do a sponsored scrub of Gryffindor Common Room, all proceeds to Spew. It would raise awareness as well as funds."
"I'll sponsor you to shut up about Spew," Ron muttered irritably, but only so Harry could hear him. Harry found himself daydreaming about Hogwarts more and more as the end of the holidays approached. He could not wait to see Hagrid again, to play Quidditch, even to stroll across the vegetable patches to the herbology greenhouses. It would be a treat just to leave this dusty, musty house, where half of the cupboards were still bolted shut, and Creature wheezed insults out of the shadows as you passed, though Harry was careful not to say any of this within earshot of Sirius. The fact was that living at the headquarters of the anti-Voldemort movement was not nearly as interesting or exciting as Harry would have expected before he'd experienced it. The members of the Order of the Phoenix came and went regularly, sometimes staying for meals, sometimes only for a few minutes' whispered conversation. Mrs. Weasley made sure that Harry and the others were kept well out of earshot, whether extendable or normal, and nobody, not even Sirius, seemed to feel that Harry needed to know anything more than he had heard on the night of his arrival. On the very last day of the holidays, Harry was sweeping up Hedwig's owl droppings from the top of the wardrobe, when Ron entered their bedroom carrying a couple of envelopes.
"Book lists have arrived," he said, throwing one of the envelopes up to Harry, who was standing on a chair. "About time. I thought they'd forgotten. They usually come much earlier than this."
Harry swept the last of the droppings into a rubbish bag and threw the bag over Ron's head into the waste paper basket in the corner, which swallowed them and belched loudly. He then opened his letter. It contained two pieces of parchment, one the usual reminder that term started on the 1st of September, the other telling him which books he would need for the coming year.
"Only two new ones," he said, reading the list. "The Standard Book of Spells, Grade 5, by Miranda Goshawk, and Defensive Magical Theory by Wilbert Slinkhard."
Crack! Fred and George apparated right beside Harry. He was so used to them doing this by now that he didn't even fall off his chair.
"We were just wondering who assigned the Slinkhart book," said Fred conversationally.
"Because it means Dumbledore's found a new defense against the dark arts, teacher," said George.
"And about time, too," said Fred.
"What do you mean?" Harry asked, jumping down beside them.
"Well, we overheard Mum and Dad talking on the extendable ears a few weeks back," Fred told Harry, "and from what they were saying, Dumbledore was having real trouble finding anyone to do the job this year."
"Not surprising, is it, when you look at what's happened to the last four," said George.
"One sacked, one dead, one's memory removed, and one locked in a trunk for 9 months," said Harry, counting them off on his fingers.
"Yeah, I see what you mean."
"What's up with you, Ron?" asked Fred.
Ron did not answer. Harry looked around. Ron was standing very still with his mouth slightly open, gaping at his letter from Hogwarts.
"What's the matter?"
said Fred impatiently, moving around Ron to look over his shoulder at the parchment. Fred's mouth fell open too.
"Prefect?"
he said, staring incredulously at the letter.
"Prefect?"
George leapt forward, seized the envelope in Ron's other hand, and turned it upside down. Harry saw something scarlet and gold fall into George's palm.
"No way," said George in a hushed voice.
"There's been a mistake," said Fred, snatching the letter out of Ron's grasp and holding it up to the light as though checking for a watermark.
"No one in their right mind would make Ron a prefect."
The twins' heads turned in unison, and both of them stared at Harry.
"We thought you were a cert,"
said Fred in a tone that suggested Harry had tricked them in some way.
"We thought Dumbledore was bound to pick you," said George indignantly.
"Winning the Tri-Wizard and everything," said Fred.
"I suppose all the mad stuff must have counted against him," said George to Fred.
"Yeah," said Fred slowly. "Yeah, you've caused too much trouble, mate. Well, at least one of you's got their priorities right."
He strode over to Harry and clapped him on the back while giving Ron a scathing look.
"Prefect. Ickle Ronnie the Prefect. Oh, Mum's going to be revolting," groaned George, thrusting the prefect badge back at Ron as though it might contaminate him.
Ron, who still had not said a word, took the badge, stared at it for a moment, and then held it out to Harry as though asking mutely for confirmation that it was genuine. Harry took it. A large P was superimposed on the Gryffindor lion. He had seen a badge just like this on Percy's chest on his very first day at Hogwarts. The door banged open. Hermione came tearing into the room, her cheeks flushed and her hair flying. There was an envelope in her hand.
Did you get...
She spotted the badge in Harry's hand and let out a shriek.
I knew it!
She said excitedly, brandishing her letter.
Me too, Harry! Me too!
No, said Harry quickly, pushing the badge back into Ron's hand. It's Ron, not me.
It... What?
Ron's prefect, not me, Harry said.
Ron, said Hermione, her jaw dropping. But are you sure? I mean...
She turned red as Ron looked around at her with a defiant expression on his face. It's my name on the letter, he said.
I, said Hermione, looking thoroughly bewildered. I, well, wow, well done, Ron. That's really
unexpected, said George, nodding.
No, said Hermione, blushing harder than ever. No, it's not. Ron's done loads of... He's really...
The door behind her opened a little wider, and Mrs. Weasley backed into the room carrying a pile of freshly laundered robes.
Ginny said the book lists had come at last, she said, glancing around at all the envelopes as she made her way over to the bed and started sorting the robes into two piles. If you give them to me, I'll take them over to Diagon Alley this afternoon and get your books while you're packing. Ron, I'll have to get you more pajamas. These are at least 6 inches too short. I can't believe how fast you're growing. What color would you like?
Get him red and gold to match his badge, said George, smirking.
Match his what?
Said Mrs. Weasley absently, rolling up a pair of maroon socks and placing them on Ron's pile.
His badge, said Fred, with the air of getting the worst over quickly. His lovely shiny new prefect's badge.
Fred's words took a moment to penetrate Mrs. Weasley's preoccupation about pajamas.
His... But, Ron, you're not...
Ron held up his badge. Mrs. Weasley let out a shriek just like Hermione's.
I don't believe it! I don't believe it! Oh, Ron, how wonderful! A prefect! That's everyone in the family!
What are Fred and I, next-door neighbours? Said George indignantly as his mother pushed him aside and flung her arms around her youngest son.
Wait until your father hears, Ron. I'm so proud of you. What wonderful news. You could end up head boy, just like Bill and Percy. It's the first step. Oh, what a thing to happen in the middle of all this worry. I'm just thrilled. Oh, Ronny.
Fred and George were both making loud, retching noises behind her back, but Mrs. Weasley did not notice. Arms tight around Ron's neck, she was kissing him all over his face, which had turned a brighter scarlet than his badge.
Mum, don't. Mum, get a grip,
he muttered, trying to push her away. She let go of him and said breathlessly,
Well, what will it be? We gave Percy an owl, but you've already got one, of course.
What do you mean?
Said Ron, looking as though he did not dare believe his ears.
You've got to have a reward for this, said Mrs. Weasley fondly. How about a nice new set of dress robes?
We've already bought him some, said Fred sourly, who looked as though he sincerely regretted this generosity.
Or a new cauldron. Charlie's old one's rusting through. Or a new rat. You always like scabbers.
Mum, said Ron hopefully, can I have a new broom?
Mrs. Weasley's face fell slightly. Broomsticks were expensive.
Not a really good one, Ron hastened to add. Just a new one for a change.
Mrs. Weasley hesitated, then smiled.
Of course you can. Well, I'd better get going if I got a broom to buy too. I'll see you all later. Little Ronny, a prefect. And don't forget to pack your trunks. A prefect. Oh, I'm all of a dither.
She gave Ron yet another kiss on the cheek, sniffed loudly, and bustled from the room. Fred and George exchanged looks.
You don't mind if we don't kiss you, do you, Ron?
Said Fred in a falsely anxious voice.
We could curtsy, if you like, said George.
Oh, shut up, said Ron, scowling at them.
Or what?
Said Fred, an evil grin spreading across his face.
Going to put us in detention?
I'd love to see him try, sniggered George.
He could if you don't watch out, said Hermione angrily.
At which Fred and George burst out laughing and Ron muttered,
Drop it, Hermione. We're going to have to watch our step, George,
said Fred, pretending to tremble.
With these two on our case?
Yeah. It looks like our law-breaking days are finally over, said George, shaking his head. And with another loud crack, the twins disapparated.
Those two,
said Hermione furiously, staring up at the ceiling, through which they could now hear Fred and George roaring with laughter in the room upstairs.
Don't pay any attention to them, Ron. They're only jealous.
I don't think they are, said Ron doubtfully, also looking up at the ceiling.
They've always said only Pratts become prefects. Still,
he added on a happier note,
they never had new brooms. I wish I could go with Mum and choose. She'll never be able to afford a Nimbus, but there's the new clean sweep out.